football is around the corner, and we are ramping it up over here on the Ringer NFL feed in the month of August.
Every week, Ben Solak and I will be bringing you not one, but two extra point takens. That's right, double the trouble as we predict, debate, and analyze our way through camp and the preseason every Monday and Friday.
But that is not all. Stephen Ruiz and I will be coming to you every Wednesday. We'll talk about everything in the world of the NFL. And who knows, maybe Stephen will even have something nice to say about your favorite squad. Though, frankly, I wouldn't count on it.
Subscribe to the Ringer NFL show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
And be sure to follow the Ringer NFL on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Ringer NFL.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. Tis crunchy yet soft. Tis filling yet has a hole. Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's, huzzah, a toast to breakfast.
This episode is brought to you by Lucasfilm and Disney Plus, presenting an all-new Star Wars series, The Acolyte. Stream the two-episode premiere June 4th and witness an investigation into a shocking crime spree where secrets will emerge and no one is safe from the truth. The Acolyte, two-episode premiere, streaming June 4th only on Disney Plus.
Quite enough of that.
Just let it play, baby. Let it play.
Here's the thing about you.
Yeah, what's up, bud? Monday, no. August 21st.
I held off the anger until now.
What?
I like to be genuine. You see that? That's why you came in. He's like, man, you're in a good mood. I'm not. Here's the deal. When you get invited to dinner, like you did.
Oh my God, this.
When you get invited to dinner, to a family dinner.
Yeah.
What I don't need you to do is show up and stuff your face full of meatballs like you did. At the end, you were eating out of spite.
I was eating.
You did not even want that. Mother makes meatballs a few times a year. This idiot.
The meatball episode.
Your daughter, on her best behavior, by the way, had three. I wasn't thrilled with it. I would have preferred two. I was loading her up on bruschetta, by the way. She went to reach for the second. I was like,
you need some more, baby.
Hey, Charlie. Shovel in the bread. More turkey and heavy dipping gravy. Heavy sauce. But Jesse goes back for the second plate, grinning the whole time.
Wasn't even hungry.
No, I could tell you weren't.
I was, at that point, it was just out
of. You were like the kid in Matilda with the chocolate
cake. Chocolate cake.
You were just shoving it down just because.
He was doing it because he was being punished. He didn't want to do it.
You were doing that to punish me. Same principle.
There was still a punishment involved.
Yeah, same principle, just, different punishment.
I got more enjoyment out of it than he did.
How would you rate that meal? I don't care about cards yet.
Same and I, when as we were driving
on,
home.
Let me set the tone.
Please.
I want your, to me, Olive Garden is a consistent six in Italian dining.
Okay.
I know what I'm going to get.
Yep.
The portions are massive, by the way. That's a plus. The price is fine. It's a six. It's above
it's
average.
It's a fast food. Yeah.
Carrabba's, I put it at a seven.
Oh, okay.
Macaroni Grill, I go 7.5.
Man, I haven't been to Macaroni Grill forever.
Based on that scale, Demo's would be like a 3. Even not really Italian, it doesn't really count. What's a crap Italian place?
Fazoli's.
Oh, Fazoli's is like a 2.
Yeah, that's
so
bottom of the barrel.
So based on that scale, give me your ranking yesterday.
I mean, I hate to give a compliment. This is not a compliment to you. It's
no,
a compliment
it's to
your mom.
Mom.
It's like a 9.5. Like, I can't imagine.
All right, now we're going to go individual dishes. So, first
we cannot spend this much time on this.
We're doing 3 minutes. Who cares at this point? Nobody's listening.
I have to tell my soccer story at some point, too.
Riveting. Bruschetta. You're great on that.
I loved your mom's bruschetta. She uses a balsamic with strawberry in there. I actually told Sam, I think the strawberry was maybe a little too sweet for me. I think it has a natural sweetness that I'm fine without, so. But it was great.
I'm
a
1 through 10 here. I don't need your friggin' description.
That was an 8. That was
okay,
a solid 8.
I was a 7 on it, so fine. The Caesar salad.
That was a 6.5.
Yeah,
six.
A little too much dressing for me.
A little dressing.
The eggplant parmesan.
Now, I like mine slightly thicker, but the way she did it, I feel like it's just a different style. I would have gone 7.8.
Ooh, low on that. I thought that was fantastic. Okay.
I thought it was great. I just kind of like it a little thicker for
the
me.
The pasta. You notice the olive oil in that pasta. And then the sauce.
People are just fast forwarding
we'll
as fast
one more.
As possible.
Fine. Pasta.
The pasta, the ziti was, that was a solid 7.
And the meatballs.
Now the meatball, that's where, Can we also say the sausage that was in there?
Underrated.
Those
meatballs
sausage.
Yesterday were a 10, by the way. But they had just enough of a burned crust on the outside with the cheese.
And the thing you're neglecting to mention is the sauce itself.
Of course.
Probably her favorite. Her best sauce, my favorite.
You know what the key to the sauce is. When you think you've had enough cheese, you just keep dumping it in.
You don't quit.
That's hand-grated Parmesan and then a little sugar.
An all-natural Italian meal we had
yesterday. What's the grade on the sauce and meatballs?
Italian Sunday. That was where you like really rank. That's like
you're
the
10
nine. That's like a 9.5 because that's where I rank all of it. But the 9.5 really comes from the meatballs
and sauce carry it. Okay. I'm happy to hear that.
Yep. Absolutely. Best meal I've had
donkeys
in a long time.
Donkeys in the hobby. This is where we're starting. This was a great post the other day. Got a ton of engagement.
I feel like I'm a donkey in the hobby at this point. Yeah. I want to talk about something, but I'm going to save it for later because we did a
Beckett
lot of
news
meal.
Too, but I want to.
We have Beckett news. We've got Scott Rogowski from, I was going to say Trivia HQ, but. That's not really what he's here to talk about. He's here to talk about Fanatics Live. He's the main guy.
He can talk about whatever he wants.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But if anybody played like in 2018, Trivia HQ was like it was the most downloaded app in the year 2018. He was the face of that. He's very, very
You have a man crush on him?
I just like his personality. Like as a person, we have so, you like him. He just has a lot of a similar sense of humor. He's also like a stand-up comedian, so
that you helps. Were more giddy talking to him than anybody else I've seen you with.
Oh, I had a lot of fun. He has like so many good Simpsons references, but he's also like a really big sports nut. Like he has specifically baseball and old baseball, but he has like a lot of the same sense of humor that I grew up with. So I appreciate that. Yeah, I nerded out a little bit. Yeah,
the man crush.
I got it when I told my wife that I had his personal phone number and I texted him the other day. She was a little jealous. That was probably the first time ever. And I've talked to heads of state, you know, well, heads of companies.
Okay.
It's almost
like this company, like
this
me?
Company. I've talked to Mike before and heads talked of to state. Other people. Anyways, it's going to be a good show. We've gotten all the pasta talk out of the way. Let's do donkey time.
This is a great meal.
I would love to know what donkey time entails because I have no idea.
Rick Thomas had a phenomenal suggestion on Facebook. And like I said, it got a ton of engagements and comments. Podcast segment, I'd love to see. Who are the top, well, we're not going to go by the number, but it's fine. He says like top 5, 10, whatevers, of biggest donkeys in the hobby. Not specific people. Biggest donkeys in his examples, like the Junk Wax 2.0 guy. The guy who pops in and just says, why don't you just buy singles?
Oh.
Anytime somebody buys wax and then shouts, let's go, after a $5 card. I thought this was phenomenal.
Oh, well, I'm not prepared to rank these, though.
We don't have to rank
them. Okay, just overall.
I had some things come to mind immediately that always make me laugh. Okay. Number one donkey guy in the hobby.
Yeah.
The hobby is ruined because of X. Always the top of my
list. But that just encompassed so many of the donkeys, though. Like, that is...
Oh, yeah.
It's just like almost like the overall negative take right off the bat without any actual evidence of it. That's a donkey, but I think you encompassed it well.
Yeah, because the hobby is more alive and well now than almost ever before. Even healthier than it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Because we don't have the spikes. And yet, no matter what, it's, well, this is ruined the hobby or ruining the hobby. And it's like, nothing's ruined. It's not the hobby you grew up with. But
that's
nothing
the problem
is.
For them. It's if it's not what I'm used to, then it's ruined.
Yeah, they're stupid. That's okay.
Okay. So that's a good one. That's a good way to start it off because that is probably predominantly what we see the most. I don't know. I think like the...
If you don't have any, I don't... No. Take your time because I got a bunch.
You named off a few of them, but I'm thinking of ones that we see more in like our own group, like the... But I think this is worldwide, the shaking, like the I'm shaking.
I don't
like
know when this took over.
Just when everybody makes such a big deal out of... A hit, even if it's a big hit, and maybe I get it. Here's the thing. There's a caveat to everything I say almost all the time. And in the caveat in this case is if you're in a big room, you're selling to these people, your job is to get people excited. Your job is to pump it up. I understand that. But do it with just an ounce of self-respect when you know it's like a $2 card and it's like, oh, yeah, we've gotten straight garbage. And now we got something slightly above garbage. That is not a reason to celebrate.
I will say this, the flip side of that too, just to focus on breakers for a minute. The guys who celebrate the hits, if the Yankees cost $500 on a PYT and I pull a $200 Anthony Volpe card and they are celebrating, and guys have started, Backyard used to say this, like, oh, when you pull the card, Jesse owns the Colts. We just pulled an Anthony Rich. Jesse's paid. Like they would kind of use that expression, which I'm okay with. People have started just to say that about everything now. And I'm like, just to be clear, 200 does not pay for 500.
Yeah.
If it's a $30 team, you pull a $60 hit, go nuts. Guy doubled his money. Fantastic. The over-celebration of hits, though, based on price of team or spot, even like in flawless breaks, I'll see guys pull a $1,000 card.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yeah, this flawless was a multi-year mixer, and it was $2,500 a spot. You're still murdered. Like, it's all in perspective. So those guys drive me absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
Another total clown one. This is why I only buy vintage.
Oh.
The vintage guys I've always just found to be just get a little bit older and start fading away into the old sunset. I love vintage. I don't mind if you're a vintage guy.
Okay.
But when there's always this thought, well, vintage all the way, I got news for you. 2 years ago, vintage pricing through the roof. People got murdered on that as well. Overall, yes, it's a safer investment, and no one's arguing that.
Yeah.
But people took baths on vintage too.
Yeah.
I don't care. The fact that you like old dudes on cards instead of young guys doesn't make you a better collector in person. I hate that attitude of like vintage or nothing. Drives me absolutely nuts.
I do. Here's the problem with that, though, is like there is a mindset of like I appreciate vintage. And I think if you are skeptical of anybody who's still active in the hobby. Now, when I think of vintage, though, that's the problem. I think of vintage not in the terms of like 1950s and what would you say the time frame is for vintage?
Pre-1970. For me.
Yeah.
Although I consider the Larry Bird rookie of vintage, just a 1980s.
I know, that's the problem. Like there's such like a wide range of what is vintage. But I think if you are collecting well-established players, I don't have a problem with that. If that's all you want to do, that seems like it makes good sense to me. You're collecting well-established players. So if you're saying vintage as far as a time frame, I totally agree. But if you're saying you're only collecting well-established players, I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Even that, though, I don't care
that as a donkey
move. But I don't care if you're buying that just because somebody decides to buy into a break, though. What does it matter to you? Just shut up. That's my point. Junk West.
Don't share your opinion. The segment is if you're sharing your opinion, that is a donkey move.
No.
If you're sharing
the opinion, though, that my way is the only right way.
100%, yes.
Oh, you bought a box? Should have bought vintage. I want my 9-year-old 100%. Doesn't want an Ernie Banks card like Mark Gibson does. Sorry.
We did establish later after last week's episode, my dad did follow Ernie Banks, which was Mike's prediction to his credit. That was actually pretty good.
Do you have the card with you? Could you share the anniversary card? It came late. There was no call accompanying it, but you got the card. He did send a card as promised in text. And the card said what?
He said,
four words.
Love Mark and Carmen. It was good. It was a nice. Listen, Junk I wax. Talked to my dad about this right after I got the card. We talked for like 30 minutes and I told him, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be one of these guys who doesn't have a ability to communicate with his father. I was going to say, and I straight out, I was like, Dad, listen, as I've gotten older, you have called less. You've texted less. I want more communication that shows my dad still thinks about me. That's all. And then he laughed about it. And I laughed about it.
And he laughed and hung up.
And now we had a good little, he's like, you know, it was different when I was a kid. You know, my dad, with that stuff never happened. You know, I think I've come a long way. I agreed with him. It was a lot different. But, you know, now that we're having this conversation, you guys on the audience, if you want more communication from your dad, just tell him. Just say it. Because I was fed up. I was just like, you know what, Dad, just do it. And he agreed. So there you go.
Eddie, you can scrub that. No. Okay, next guy, Junk Wax 2.0. I hate these people too.
The 2.0 junk. Yeah.
It's just like there are a lot more people in the hobby. There are a lot of SKUs. The reason Junk Wax was Junk Wax is there was no chase. There was no numbering. There was zero scarcity at all. It doesn't mean that there are not more cards produced today. There probably are.
And it doesn't mean there's not still issues with scarcity because there's.
Sure. Base card. But there are a ton of things that are scarce.
Yes.
Numbering, autographs, patches. That's the differentiator. That's what people always leave out of that argument. It's not just the sheer amount of cards. It's the fact that back then, it was just producing the exact same cards, mm-hmm. period. No parallel, no refractor, no numbered, no nothing.
Yeah. I think
this is a totally different thing.
I think people are just not really fully understanding what Junk Wax was. To your credit, you just described it very well. But they think it, you know, like in the last episode, or maybe it was the one before that, we talked about, are there too many one-of-ones? You know, it's like getting to the point where scarcity isn't as scarce. And that is where I think that Junk Wax 2.0 talk starts to come in, but the term really does not apply. I agree.
No, not at all.
I'm completely tired of it, but I do not care for people sharing opinion, like a overly positive opinion on, I guess like their own personal collection when they're downplaying someone else's. Like oh, you have that? Well, I have this. It's like so much better.
Oh, the flex.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, the flex. Thank you. That's the best way to put it. Flexing on other guys because they have a better collection. Just be happy. Like if someone, this is a lot of this, I think for me, at least personally, I'm sure to Mike as well. We have the one of the largest Facebook groups out there for cards. We have almost 100,000 people in it. We
just
see
past 99 last night, by the way.
I know. It will hit 100,000 this week.
I'm archiving that thing soon.
We have gotten to the point where we see so many people say things and new and old, but if someone wants to post a card that they've had, they just saw and they fully appreciate and you've seen it 1,000 times, that does not mean you need to come in there and flex and be like, oh, you like that? How about this? You know, just let them have their day.
That's fair. Last one I have, the guy who celebrates the bad news. The amount of people gloating that they never wasted money on Wander. Yeah. I'm like, you are just garbage.
That's mean.
Honestly. That's like, mean. Dude, it's just like, yeah, I don't care. Good for you. You didn't do it. Like, hooray. You know how many people bought Wander and collected Wander and chased him and made money on him?
Yeah.
So what? The fact that you didn't doesn't mean you're smarter. Nobody predicted the guy was going to potentially have like a massive issue off the field and never play again. Those guys drive me absolutely nuts, too. The victory dances on the graves of others. I'm happy to dance on the graves of terrible people. But when it comes to like people collecting, and then you, I think that is just atrocious.
I agree with that.
There you go. Donkeys. Absolutely.
Okay.
Do you have a sound effect for that? Hit a sound effect. Hit the blue. What's the blue button do? Hit the blue button. Hit the blue one.
This one or this one? There's two blue buttons.
Hit the other blue one. That one. Not useful. Yeah, there you go. Donkey of the week. Donkey's playing the drums. All right, Beckett news. Go ahead. You can unhit it now.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Well, you didn't say unhit it. I did want to talk about a little bit of football if we have a chance. But yeah, let's talk about the Beckett news. I would be completely shocked to see somebody in the audience has heard about this, unless you followed Daryl Revelle.
You're not
going to
see anybody.
Well, sure. But if you came back and told me you were shocked as soon as you heard it come out of our mouths, Beckett has let go their president as well as another. What is his position? He was someone involved with their app that they were trying to get started.
Andrew Metal. He was the co-founder and CEO of Do Dilly.
And he is basically...
That was the app they bought that was going to be like a live, potentially like a live streaming.
Yeah, he was the person who oversaw...
A lot of NFT talk with that too when they first bought it. Like it was gonna,
yeah, that's right. That's right. So he was the person who oversaw that aspect of the company. But the bigger news is that Jeremy Murray, who was the... president of Beckett, he'd been with the company for like 18 years. He also just got let go. This is coming in such a quiet and private way that I've got a lot of questions.
I just think it's interesting.
Like there's some theories going around by myself.
To put in perspective, if Nat Turner got fired or left Collectible, I think it'd be all over the place. If Pete from SGC left or got fired from SGC,
oh, 100%.
I think that would be all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like other people at companies. I don't know anybody at Panini like by name who would be in the public eye like that. You know, if David Liner from Topps, something happened with him. Like,
sure.
Like I think it is amazing. This has gone almost entirely.
This happened
under the record
a week ago. It happened on the 16th. August 16th was when Darren Revelle tweeted about this. There is not a story. I can't find any news source. I can't find anything on Beckett's site. I can't find even other social media accounts picking this up.
Would you notice what it said, though? It said they've informed their employees. These people
exactly.
Are gone.
There's not anything out there about weird. This. And apparently they're saying, according to Revelle's post, is that the employees are disappointed because he was very well liked around the company. However, I mean, it's not to say, like, does it completely not make any sense? No, because you're also the president during the time where Beckett has gone from number two, I guess you could probably say, as a grading company to...
No question. Back in 21. He was hired in early
21. Three 20. Or four at this point,
he was
honestly.
Hired in early 21, I believe, as the president. He took on that role.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So, yeah, you're coming right off the switch from... I mean, honestly, 2020 was a switch from PSA from Beckett being one to PSA being one.
You had, like, the grading change fiasco that obviously didn't happen. You had multiple opportunities to save face and to, you know, oh, hey, we made a mistake. Oh, you know, we're going to do this or that. There was really nothing. Like, they just went silent.
The other thing, too, though, that year, I believe it was 21, in August of 21, they bought, the parent company of Beckett bought Southern Hobby. There has been no Like, I thought there was going to be like some sort of an, like, hey, let's grade, add some sort of a grading element to distribution.
Yeah.
Or let's, honestly, that's why we were talking to Beckett even back then of like, hey, we have a small live streaming app.
Mm-hmm.
You guys should buy this, distribute product direct to sellers there, grade right off. Like, that made so much sense in the world to me. And at the time, all I got was like on a call with a couple other people from Beckett and the Andrew from Due Dilly guy, which I told you, I wasn't a fan. I wasn't impressed. I mean, that's fine. I'm a jerk all the times. I wasn't impressed. I mean, he came into me when they made that acquisition. I was just like, "What for? What?"
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What is
you didn't have to do that.
What does Dilly do? I don't even like.
Well, obviously that didn't work out. I think your call was probably right in that situation. But this is just really weird because you would almost, especially before 2020, this would still have made news. After 2020, when the hobbies exploded, this 100% should be out there. And the fact that it's not is really weird. I have a theory.
Okay, so Jesse prefaced this earlier. He has a conspiracy theory about this.
Yeah, this is not even a theory. It is a conspiracy theory. Yeah.
When he said it. So, if I hear one mention of aliens, you're getting your paid docs.
As long as I don't say Kevin O'Leary, I think we're going to be fine.
Oh, God.
Kevin O'Neill was a gentleman who worked for Topps for a number of years. Very
as well known at Topps as anybody, by the way.
Yeah, I think he was the director of hobby sales. He seems like a very nice guy.
Always been great to us.
Yep. He moved over to Beckett in August of this year as vice president of sales.
Not August. No, yeah. He's been over there for a couple months.
According to his LinkedIn, it says August 2023. So maybe he just made the move,
but it wasn't official.
Maybe.
Okay.
By the way, that Jeremy, his LinkedIn still says he's the president, and Twitter, nothing, no posts about this at all.
Most disturbing thing about that Jeremy LinkedIn,
J-E-R-O-M-E,
what?
Jerome. I don't. Maybe we're just pronouncing it. Maybe it is Jerome.
That'd be less reason to hire him. Honestly, I would have fired him years ago.
My conspiracy theory.
Yep.
Kevin O'Neill is a plant from Fanatics to bring down Beckett from within, to drive their costs lower so they're more affordable for an acquisition by Fanatics. Dun, dun, dun.
Fanatics goes in and buys Beckett Grading and buys Southern Hobby as well for the distribution.
Get them all. Get it all in one.
What's the name of the, can you find this out? The name of the parent company of Beckett and Southern Hobby? I would like to know who that is.
Okay.
Because that company's got to be, I mean, Beckett's got to be worth a couple hundred million. Well, I don't know anymore. And Southern Hobby, I have no idea what the value of that company is. Because distribution's obviously taking a massive hit.
Yeah,
but they do a ton of non-sports as well.
Yeah, okay, that's a solid
Gaming
point.
Gaming is big over there. Even like board games they still distribute, I think. Oh, here you go. Intrust Global Group. That's the name of the company that acquired Southern Hobby.
Nice. Okay.
I'm doing your job, man. I'd like to know what... They're the number one wholesale distributor. They joined Beckett, Dragon Shield, to create a collect. So Beckett and Dragon Shield were the two brands they already owned. This Intrust Global Group. And then they now own Southern Hobby as well.
So there you go. That's my conspiracy theory. Mike, what are your thoughts on that conspiracy theory?
Just keep talking for a second, if you would.
Okay, great. So I'll just continue to dive into what I've already discussed.
Yeah,
Kevin O'Leary, or Kevin, dang it, I did do it.
Nice.
Kevin O'Neill, this could be complete. It's more than likely complete nonsense. It's just an interesting thing because when you see a company that was considered in most cases the second largest grader, someone with a lot of respect, a lot of people still respect Beckett even after they've fallen to some degree. It is very, I guess, circumstantial as to why they would not do things to take action to make themselves look better in the public eye. Hire a better PR team, make some changes, just ask their general customers of, hey, what should we do? It's almost like they listened because I did see that they asked at some point and then went completely silent. And they can say, oh, well, we tried, we reached out, and then they did nothing because they were actually wanting to do something else, which was make themselves a position for a buyout. I don't know. That could be complete nonsense.
I like it. And Trust, by the way, is worth about it has about $17 billion in assets, it says, this company.
Okay.
I don't know much else about them. Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. So that's what's...
Are they a publicly traded company, do you know? I'll look.
I believe they are a private equity firm, it looks like, but I don't really understand most of what I'm reading. I wasn't expecting to go down this road. I like this. So your thought is Kevin goes over there...
That can't be.
I mean,
it.
That but part's here's not the thing. Real. But I do. But
they, maybe they did know. Like maybe they've already been in talks about it.
Okay. Cause yeah, him going over there as a plant makes no sense to me. But him going over there maybe as part of a bigger plan, I could see.
Yes.
No, and not even in a malicious way. Just hey, go to this company.
Exactly.
Get to work because our plan down the road is to make an acquisition or something big here. I guess if I'm Fanatics, by the way, I'm not buying a grading company. I don't think you need to. There's enough reason to keep separate. And if I am buying a grading company, I'm buying SGC.
Yeah, but at this point, they are buying up every aspect of the hobby. Why would it make – it would make perfect sense for them to go after a grading, which is the probably the biggest part of the hobby that they don't have a foothold in.
That's fair. You're not buying distribution, though. Like, I can't imagine that happening.
You would think they already have it.
Well, they already do. I mean, they're already distributing, so.
That's what I mean. Like, they already have the foundation to be able to add in cards, shipping out cards. Especially, they have international, too.
But buy a grading company. Huh. Maybe. I'm not saying it's wrong, by the way. I have no idea.
You heard it from Sports Boy first here, people. Just go ahead and take that. All right. Our guest is about to join us. That was your conspiracy theory with Beckett. Let's find out more, people. If you guys have any details, let us know. The only thing with football is just, obviously, we got preseason going on. There's a lot of interesting takes going on right now. I think a lot of people are happy to see Luck doing somewhat decent. Not Luck.
What?
Dang it. I was so confident I was not going to say this. I get stuck in my head for whatever reason. Jordan Love and Luck, it flips in my mind.
Do you know Luck's first name?
Andrew.
Nice.
Yeah.
Look at you.
I don't like to brag about it, but I do know people's other
names. So Scott O'Leary Jordan Love, Andrew Luck. Got it.
Jordan Love, people are getting excited about. His pricing has started to go up a little bit. Actually, he's starting to outprice a couple quarterbacks in his same category. So the 2020 quarterbacks, he is now outpricing Tua by about 20-30% or so.
Makes sense. Yep.
So sure. I hated to and say that. I
he's know probably catching up to Jalen Hurts, isn't he?
He is getting closer to Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts has pulled away. He and Herbert are – the fact that Herbert is still outselling Hurts is just so ridiculous.
I'm okay with
me.
That because Herbert has a crazy high ceiling and talent. Jordan Love, I think, has talent. I don't know.
He's $74 for his, again, we're just going off of 2020 Prism PSA 10s. So it sells for $74. That is up. He was selling closer to like 50s, 60, lower 60s up until the last
good against the
few
Patriots.
Weeks. Then Tua, unfortunately, he's stuck in the $50 to $55 range.
I'm in on Tua.
I know you are. I'm very curious to see what happens there. The other weird thing we were talking about before the show, Trevor Lawrence. So someone reached out to this. If you guys have any experience with this, we'd love to hear about it. But he had mentioned that the pricing on PSA 10s is coming down as far as it relates to PSA 9s or raw. He said typically you would see a PSA 10 being about 3x what you'd see as a PSA 9, but he's starting to see more and more it being 2 or 2.5x. I started looking into this, and the first card I looked at was Trevor Lawrence's 2021 Prism PSA 10. That is a bad example to start with.
Correct.
Because Trevor Lawrence PSA 10 goes for $331, while his PSA 9 goes for $38. I have to assume that card is just very hard to 10. Because there's only, I mean, there is a low pop, especially for a modern car. There's only 247 of them versus the 9.
That's weird
where
to me, too.
There's 1,400 of them.
I don't understand it.
But it's just weird because everything, like, why is that specific card harder to 10? Because, like, you go to Justin Fields 10s, he's got, like, 1,900 of them. So there's something to be said about this. We'd love to hear more research if you guys have any.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
That has brought us to our special guest.
I've got the intro to this. Oh. And now it's time for Jesse's Man Crush.
It's hit not the, that the, weird,
the,
bro.
The blue one. The blue one. The blue one. There you go.
Nicely done. Scott Rogowski from Fanatics Live. How the heck are you, man?
I'm fantastic. I'm Fanatics Tick Tick. How are you guys?
Doing so good. As formerly mentioned, he was also part of one of my favorite apps of all time, Trivia HQ.
Look at your cheeks.
I'm not. It's not that weird. I'm not being weird
it's
about
rosacea,
it.
It's rosacea, Mike. It's rosacea.
It is. Thanks a lot. It's a medical condition. Would you make fun of me if I was in a wheelchair? No.
Yes, absolutely.
You'd absolutely.
You'd be rolling around doing your thing, living the dream.
I hope Mike appreciates my description, my title here. This is an homage to your description of me with on that famous episode, hair. July 13th.
Did I say? Who said that?
I swear to God, that he listens to every episode.
If I can recreate it here, this is an amazing moment for me. That host, he starts off with just, that host. Who is that guy in the middle with the goofy hair? Oh, my God. I don't ever need to see that guy in a break again. And Jesse goes, I actually don't mind him.
That was actually before I knew who you were. I just knew you looked familiar.
The guy pulls an Albert Pujols, Savage Patch, and Scott is yelling at some prospect off the field, not paying attention. This is not a me problem.
Don't you dare speak ill of Scott.
Per my instructions from the producers.
Put me in with the producers, the true idiots of the situation. I've moved on. Scott is on my great list.
Yes, thank you. Don't you dare.
Yeah, trust me. Anybody you admire as much as Scott, I'm not going to insult again.
So, Scott, what's your official title with Fanatics Live?
That's a great question. I believe it's creative consultant, perhaps, host.
Yeah.
I've been consulting and hosting. So that's what I've been doing.
That's pretty awesome, though,
not sure how to officialize it.
So you got pulled in now. I believe I talked to some guys over at Tops that you were buddies with. Was it Jeremy?
Mustache Jeremy.
Jeremy, yeah. Fullerton, that you were buddies with, that you guys used to, I think Jeremy even mentioned he got one of the first copies of Trivia HQ when you were working over there. And you used to work for Tops, right? Is that right?
You got one of the first copies hot off the press.
That's cool. Very cool.
Wait, how do you mean copies? I thought it was just an app.
It is an app.
It's an app.
Yeah,
it's
okay. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry.
But he was an early adopter is what you mean.
That's what I
understand
meant to
the
say.
Metaphor.
Thank you.
I got you.
Yes.
No, Jeremy and so many of those guys are still there. I mean, Clay. I was working under Clay back then.
You met Clay?
Sure.
It's the guy at the piano bar.
Oh, yeah.
That was Clay.
Yes.
And my buddy, I got a shout out Colin Butler, who was I came in, I worked at Tops in 2010, okay? And I was one of the lowest men on the totem pole. The first job you can get there, which is called editor, which sounds like a pretty big job, right?
Oh, yeah.
Basically, I was the guy along with my buddy Colin next to me. We would sit there and we get the set list from the, brand managers. And here's the set. Here are all the players in it. Here are the designs from the designers. Now go find the photos and plug them in. It was literally just picking photos for the card. But to me, that was like the biggest role, right? Because the card itself, the way the card looked, depended on myself, my decision, awesome. My artistic choice. I chose the photo, cool. cropped it into the card, and dude, boom, the card was made. It was off to the presses. So, you know, like the fact that that's the lowest paid entry level job at Topps at the time, I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. This should be
there's a lot of questions.
Most
yeah.
iconic photo that you were in charge of selecting. Anything Ooh. Like jump off
okay,
the page?
Okay. So here you go. Ready? This is gonna be a great. I'm expecting sales of 2010 Topps Heritage to jump through the roof after this episode airs.
I'm googling it right now.
Oh, I'm ready to pump and dump the crap out of this.
2010 Topps Heritage Baseball.
Yep.
I'm pumping and dumping now.
Yep.
2010 Topps Heritage Baseball was a set. You know, every year Topps Heritage obviously pays homage to the set from I guess 50 years prior, whatever it is.
Yep.
So in 2010, I'm trying to think. I think it was 1962 Topps.
Okay.
That was the design we were mimicking. Okay. So the design was the wood border design. What I did, which I don't think any other editor had done previously or probably since I left, is because I'm such a card nerd myself and collecting for 30 plus years. My dad had all the 62 Topps cards. So I went back to the original 62 Topps set and I tried to find cards to match the exact framing and format of the original player. So if a player, you know, based on the card. So if card 17 in that set, whoever card 17 in 2010 Heritage was, I chose a photo that would mimic whether it was, you know, a close up photo of a guy without a hat on. I found a picture without a hat on, or, you know, a photo of a guy with a bat in his hand in a batting stance. I found a photo to match that. I tried to match it as best I could with the photos I had available. So that's a little Easter egg that probably nobody knows about.
I was about to say, has anyone ever said, congratulations, that was so well done? Has anyone noticed that you did that? Oh,
nobody
man.
Cared. Nobody noticed. But that's fine.
They will
it
now.
Was for me.
Oh, they're about
it was
to
for
theirs.
Me and yeah. me alone.
This oh, will, now, okay. 1961 is the top set.
Oh,
now I got to verify this. 61 is the one that 2010 mimics. Card number one is Albert Pujols.
Now you're going to go back
well,
and
I'm
check.
Going
what's
to find
card
it.
Number one?
Yep. Hold on a second. Before I get this wrong. So then it was 2011. My bad. It was 2011 Topps Heritage.
So 62 that was released Topps.
On, the wood I was grain. Working on it in 2010. It was released in March 21, 2011. So it's the 2011 Topps Heritage set. It was definitely the 62 together. Design that I was working on.
Might
but basically, that whole set, Topps Heritage 2011, those are my photos, my crops. That's my set. I'm very proud of that set.
I've always wanted to have someone on who did that
okay,
job.
Okay.
The fact that you were just happened to be that.
This is pretty, I'll be honest with you. Me and Scott have come full circle now. This is actually pretty ridiculous. I am looking at the vintage
don't
set.
You dare steal my best friend, bro. God.
Well, I don't have any. No, I'm still happily married to my wife. I'm not thinking of leaving for Scott. But I will say this is actually pretty impressive. The Freddie Freeman is identical. Okay, this is pretty good. You can carry on with your whatever you want to talk about. I don't care anymore. Now I'm just
gonna
be,
you're
gonna I got
him
geeking out.
This is pretty, this is actually pretty good.
Okay, so let's. You've been collecting, and you also own a shop right now in LA. That is it memorabilia, sports memorabilia? What is your shop about?
It's primarily vintage clothing, hats, jerseys, jackets, t-shirts, and I would say it's probably 75% sports. I do have a whole band tee collection. I've got, you know, random tees and.
Oh, cool.
You know, colleges and stuff. But I would say between college sports, pro sports, probably 70-75%. And it's, you know, I have some vintage cards, some packs of 91 Skybox basketball, 90 Score hockey, 91 Tops, just to, you know, have some impulse buys for the kids or whatever, $3 a pack or something cheap. But that's, yeah, it's mostly clothing.
That's so cool, though. What's the name of it? I just want to plug it in case anyone is
called
in the LA.
Quiz Daddies. Quiz Daddies.
That was your thing. That was Quiz. Everybody called you Quiz Daddy when you were on the show. That's hilarious.
Yeah, and that name evolved because it was originally Quiz Daddy's Closet when I was doing... I started it pretty much after... One of my biggest regrets, by the way, I had an audience of millions on HQ.
Yeah.
And I didn't do anything with it.
Never promoted yourself. Yeah, exactly.
The minute I leave, I go, you know, I have all these vintage clothing that I've been collecting over the years. Maybe I should start selling it. And I started the Instagram page after I left. Very, very difficult to grow that thing where you're not broadcasting in front of millions anymore.
They didn't have you back on Good Morning America to talk about it?
Oh, no. That's stupid. The press sort of dried up around the same time. But Quiz Daddy's Closet became Quiz Daddy's. I just shortened it. I rebranded it. And I feel good about it. I got a shop. I opened the shop in March of 22 in Santa Monica, 2525 Main Street. And it's been going well. It's supposed to be a three-month experiment. And it's lasted 18 months now. It's going so well. The community loves it. I've regulars coming back. I've got tourists coming in and loving it. So
that's so cool.
You guys got to check it out when you're in LA.
Do you break out of there? I saw like when I was watching that Trivia HQ documentary on HBO, at the very end, they were like kind of showing where you are now. And it looked like you were doing breaks in the actual storefront.
Yeah, I experimented a little bit. I was working for some other breaking platforms back at the time. And what I wanted to do, and what I still want to do, is make my store, or, you know, create a space where you can have athletes come hang out, break, talk, sign autographs. You know, back in my day, and I assume it still happens at hobby shops where they still exist, they'd get athletes to come to the store as a promotional thing. You can sign. I met Chris Mullen at a card shop in like East Chester, New York. Bob, some of them, you know, you didn't have to be a big name. I think like Dave Malicki, Mets pitcher, 1993. Dave Malicki was signing cards. I'm like, sure. I was 9 years old. I'm gonna go see Dave Malicki and get an autograph.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, first Dave Malicki reference on the pod, by the way.
That's a Easter shame. Eggs and Malicki. It took almost
there's
3 years.
There's your name of the pod today. Easter eggs and Malicki.
Go spell Dave. Try spelling Dave Malicki if you can.
I'm on it.
And by the way, great Immaculate Grid player, Dave Malicki. He bounced around a fair amount.
Wow.
Okay, so I will say I have sworn off Immaculate Grid.
Oh, you know, because you get them all wrong?
I suck at Immaculate Grid.
Oh, I'm really good at it. I just Google everything and I find it really fast. So
you're a good person. Yeah.
All right, so you have no integrity, just none.
But I want to bring. But to close the loop on that, sorry. I wanted to bring. You know, I had like athletes. I met a guy who reps some Rams players, and some, I guess, Yency Almonte on the Dodgers came by one time, and we kind of did a little break chasing the player's rookie card from whatever it was. I think we had Tutu Atwell on the Rams, and we broke like 20 score or 20-21 score, whatever it was, and then we hit his card. He'd sign it live.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
We gave, you know, yeah, it was cool, man, and chat that's him up, cool. You know, so. I want to do that with Fanatics Live is my plan now. We're working on it.
So what are any future plans for Fanatics Live that you're involved with at this point?
Oh my gosh, so many. Yeah. So many.
Can you break
I know,
some
I know
news?
Nick Bell.
Yeah, break
I listened
something.
To Nick Bell. He was a little tight-lipped on it.
Yeah, Nick is a little, here's the deal with
he
Nick.
He said though when we had you on, you could say whatever you wanted and it was
here's
okay.
Here's the problem with Nick. Right. Little too well spoken, a little too media trained for my liking.
You like to find someone who's gonna let something slip.
I want somebody who's gonna say a few things they're not supposed to.
Yeah.
He didn't even laugh at any of my inappropriate jokes. There was nothing.
Yeah, it was really weird.
He is the CEO. You gotta respect the CEO.
Not to mention at 16 he's doing stuff like more than any of us ever. Like literally just exits from companies. I was like at 16 I was at Papa Gino's. So
I mean that's the thing. The guy's absolutely brilliant and his resume is just sparkling and the team he's brought in, because I'm not supposed to mention other platforms, but I will say I've worked for some other platforms.
You can name them. It's okay. You know, we name names here.
I'll just say I've worked for two others in the space. Okay. And I can tell you, you know, from my personal experience, that the teams that they had around sports cards specifically just did not know anything about sports cards. All right.
I mean,
those apps were not built
for
breaking. They were not built for sports cards.
Built by tech people.
By tech people who were like Funko Pops.
Yep.
You know, or whatever. So, I mean, so like at some point you go, well, I mean, why do they even get into sports cards? Well, I guess they saw the money being made and it was kind of an opportunistic thing. Like, let's jump in there and do it. But they truly, the people at the top just don't know anything about it. Or, I mean, I'm sure they've learned over time by now, but at the beginning. So what's amazing about Fanatics Live is this is an app that, you know, Nick has brought together a team. First of all, it's in Fanatics, like just bought Tops and all that collectibles, you know, business involved with it. But these are people who are passionate about cards, who actually know cards, who know breaking. It's, you know, our little catchphrase, which is a little cliche. It's like built for breaking by people who know breaking, right? And it's, and that's what I'm so excited about. And that's where the potential is, because we've already seen like the people we've onboarded, the breakers we've onboarded, the partners we have, and they're giving us feedback. And our feedback loop is so tight where they say, hey, you know, it'd be great. Like this other app doesn't do this for us. We want it on this app. And boom, we make it happen for them. And we've seen such incredible growth.
That's
over,
cool.
I mean, really, we've only been live for about a month, I think. Like less, if you think about it. What, the National was 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, well,
less, I mean, we're.
Because what was the All-Star game was, oh, that wasn't the actual.
It was just a beta.
Yeah, that was like beta.
All-Star was like the beta thing, you know, very invite only. But so really, yeah, it's been about a month of being like fully live. And to see the growth we've had in that month and the partners, how much money they're making, frankly, how well everybody's doing, it's really, really encouraging to see. And we're just starting, you know, what my role is primarily about is coming up with kind of this original programming element. So last week was the debut, last Thursday. I debuted, speaking of Immaculate Grid, I had an idea for a show called The Immaculate Rip, based on taking that day's Immaculate Grid, let's rip a box, let's fill out the grid with the cards we hit from the box. And if you hit a player that corresponds to a grid, you get a prize.
Oh,
you
know?
And then
cool.
At the end of the show, we gave out a grand prize for whoever who completed the grid, the ninth person to fill that spot, won a whole box of cards. So we did this with vintage boxes. We're going to do it on Thursday night with football, Mike. I know you're a football guy. So Thursday night, we're going to do it again with a vintage football box, and we're going to give away, you know, football cards. And it's just that type of show. And by the way, it was a straight up giveaway show. We didn't make any money on it. It's not about making money. It's about having fun, sharing the passion for it, letting people win free stuff. Who doesn't like to win free stuff? And those are the types of shows that I was brought on board to kind of develop and host and curate this slate of original programming. And I've got, you know, many, many more ideas. And the team has lots and lots of ideas that we're going to start implementing as we move into the rest of the year and to the beyond.
That sounds really cool. It sounds like you have a lot of autonomy as far as like using your original ideas for this. Do you have much pushback, or is it like, hey, this is my idea, we're running with it?
Jesse, I'm getting a little emotional here talking about it, because I've been on this journey now for, I mean, really 3 years. You know, I left HQ in 2019, March 2019. So it's been like, you know, 4 years since I left there. But even when I was at HQ, I actually had an idea for a live auction app back in 2018. You know, I'm seeing, all of a sudden I'm hosting HQ and I'm seeing the potential of live streaming, and I'm going, I've been on eBay since 1998. Okay. I'm like, if I can just create an app where it's eBay live with live auctions and people, I'm showing things off on screen like QVC and you can bid live, like this would be a major, major concept. Of course, you know, I actually partnered with a guy and we tried to get something off the ground, but you know, it didn't really go anywhere. Look, lo and behold, you know, other apps kind of came up and took that mantle. But I've basically been thinking about this space for years, and then specifically thinking about card-based shows, hobby game shows, if you can call it. And, you know, I tried it at the first app I worked at. They were not, you know, they hired me to ostensibly do that. And then 2 months into my contract, they let me go. They said, we're pivoting.
Wait a minute. Were you with Collectible? Is that where we knew you from?
Well, actually, I'm not even counting Collectible, but I was working for Collectible, but that's not even one of the companies I'm talking about.
That's where I met. That's where we met Scott originally. He was hosting the trivia thing for Collectible.
That's right.
Wait. Oh my God. And I didn't even recognize that.
Easter egg.
Insane.
Boom.
Okay. I don't know.
Another one. I'm sorry, Scott. Yeah, I got carried
away. Well, that's a whole separate. Yeah, you know, Ezra Levine. I went to high school with Ezra. Great guy.
What?
And he was doing Collectible, and he's like, hey, you want to host some trivia shows for. You know, I mean, it wasn't really part of their business. That was also kind of a promotional thing.
Sure.
But it was super fun to do. But anyway, the other apps I worked for, you know, they sort of pivoted. They told me they were pivoting away from originals, and they really haven't done it since. So I guess they were being serious about it. They kind of focused on their platform.
Yeah.
I went to another company, and that started off really well. We had a studio and we were doing these live shows, and I kind of created, they gave me sort of free rein and they supported me for the beginning. And then I guess they sort of pivoted as well.
Jeez.
And decided to save some money and drop the studio. But look, I'm ending up here, and I could not be in a better situation with Fanatics, with you know, the money they have, and they're willing to invest, the reach they have, the brand, you know, quality and the brand leverage they have, and for them to come to me, and then the respect they have for me, which is really what it comes down to. And like you said, the autonomy to say, Scott, we know what you're capable of. We know what you did at HQ. We know you can command these audiences. We know you're likable, despite Mike, you know, maybe having some issues with you. There's one guy in Tennessee who doesn't like you. But besides him, there's everybody else.
My dad
the world
is
does.
Not a fan either.
Shut up.
I'm just
up.
Kidding. I'm just kidding.
And basically, they're saying, Scott, you know, we want to support you. We want to give you a team to make this work. And that's what they're doing. Like last week, they just said, yeah, go ahead and do it. You want to do the show? Immaculate Grid? I mean, probably half of them didn't even understand what it was.
Yeah. But they said, trusted.
Hey, you believe in it? Go for it. And we did it. And it was a massive success. We had like 250 concurrents. Man. Watching the show for an hour and 45 minutes. And so now all I have to do is kind of prove out slowly that these things are going to work.
Yeah.
Which I've started to do. And I'm super confident that this is going to be a partnership that lasts a long time. And I really couldn't be happier to be anywhere else.
Okay. I do have like completely off the wall side question. So when you Google Scott Rogowski, you still come up as comedian as well. Do you do any stand up at this point?
I mean, stand up specifically, like I've done a couple shows here and there. I moved to LA 2 years ago, like, you know, peak pandemic, pretty much 2.5 years ago. So, you know, the clubs were not really active at the time.
Yeah.
And, back in New York, I did a couple like rooftop shows. My buddy Sam Morrell would be like, hey, you want to host? You want to open for me at a rooftop? I'd be like, yeah, sure. Those were fun. But it was a weird time, man. I mean, I actually thought like comedy might be dying at that point. So I sort of, to be honest, everybody's, you know, Sam's doing phenomenal. He's touring, selling out everywhere. Comedy certainly hasn't died. Live shows are back. I just personally have sort of focused on you know the companies that I'm working for, like the tech space, because that's the thing about HQ. When I joined HQ, I was doing comedy, I was doing stand-up, I was doing my live talk shows for 12, 13 years prior to that. And then I got this HQ gig, and I was like the last guy you'd probably want, you know, in the tech world. Because I didn't even have an Instagram account when I joined HQ in 2017. Didn't even have one. I didn't care. I didn't have Snapchat. I'm not a tech guy, frankly. Sure. Like I don't, you know, like social media. I don't enjoy what technology's
Mike's
done.
Mike's liking you more and more.
The more he talks, the more I am really starting to
fall. I'm telling you, he's a good guy.
Keep it going.
But I joined HQ, and then all of a sudden, I'm sort of opened up to this world that I didn't know really, frankly, existed, that people do use their phones quite frequently. They're sort of glued to the live streaming aspect to it. And I saw the potential of it. And I guess there was always this conflict at HQ, like, is this a media company? Is this a tech company? Because yeah. I came from the media world, the entertainment world. The founders came from the tech world. And that sort of tension, unfortunately, sort of spelled the demise of the company ultimately. But what I took away from it was, I got all my friends still doing stand-up, doing open mics, doing shows, you know, trying to get the late night spot on Fallon or Kimmel or whatever. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm making pretty good money in this tech space, getting to do my jokes. Like, yeah. I got an HQ. I was basically doing stand-up, you know, making people laugh. Like, I couldn't hear them laughing, but.
But you were so witty and like your improvisational skills are so good that it's like, this man has to have come from comedy. When I saw you on there, it's like, this guy has got the confidence and what seems like the experience that he doesn't stutter, he doesn't stammer when he's in front of a camera, because there's no way that could have been all scripted, or at least I assume it wasn't.
No, I mean, and it comes from the fact that I had been doing live performances for over a dozen years at that point. So, you know, again, like I kind of had to take a, I think part of growing up is learning your strengths and just kind of figuring out, you know, a career. Because look, when I started this cult comedy journey back in 2005, like in college, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I didn't know where it was going to go. Could I make a career as a stand-up? You know, you start going open mics, you start meeting other comics, and you look around and you realize, like, there are 45-year-old guys on the same show with me as a 22-year-old who don't seem to be progressing very much. There are these road dogs, they call them, guys who go to the Cleveland Funny Bone and the Ha Ha Clubs, and, you know, maybe they make a couple grand a weekend or something, but they're on the road 40 weekends a year.
Man.
Like, is that the life I want? I started looking around. So even back then, I started realizing, you know, if I'm going to be successful in my life and my career in this business, I got to figure it out. And that's where I first started with the talk show space. I started producing my own talk shows. I had a sports comedy show called 12 Angry Mascots. And we interviewed Hall of Famer Darrell Revis was one of my guests back in 2009.
No way you got Revis.
Yeah. Do you know who
I got Revis in 2009. I got David Deal from the Giants. I had Chris Duhon. I had, you know, I was in New York. So a lot of like Knicks, Rangers, Jets and Giants players, Amani Toomer, Jeff Nelson from the Yankees. But I was doing those shows for 3 years. Then I did my Running Late with Scott Rogowski show for another 10 years. So I was doing that kind of stuff. And then again, HQ came along and I had another pivot point for me when I go, I think there's some potential in this live streaming space. I think I'm pretty good at it and it's fun for me to do. And so I think I'm going to focus on this rather than the stand-up route, or even like I stopped doing my talk show at that point because I go, I'm doing this talk show. Yeah, it's fun to do, but I'm entertaining 100 people, 200 people. I'm spending 40 hours working on it and I'm promoting it and booking guests. It was like so much work, you know?
Yeah.
And it just came to a point where I said, like, I need to kind of grow up and take a sober look at my career. And honestly, I think it's all working out. I couldn't be happier.
I would have to say, take the stability in that case. Obviously, we're benefiting from it. The people in the hobby are benefiting from it, so we appreciate it.
Is Snapchat the thing where the messages disappear? Is that what Snapchat is?
That is a feature, yes. Absolutely. My daughter would view it as the picture-taking app where it just changes your face.
Oh, it takes pictures, too.
Yeah, they got a lot of filters. It can be fun. I've used them on you. You like them. Scott, if you ever want to be third man in on a podcast,
well,
and
want
to move
second.
To Nashville, well, I'm just saying. Like,
why would he have to move?
Well, you obviously like him.
Why does he have to move, though? He doesn't have to move here. Do you have any kids,
I think
Scott?
It would work well.
No kids.
Oh, he's out on the next pod. Never mind. All right, that's fine.
Yeah, we have a second pod coming.
We got a new project coming, but Procreate, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, it does. It is a requirement, unfortunately.
Are the Nashville Sounds still around?
Bro, you know the Nashville Sounds? Yeah.
Are you that excited about the baseball? They are still around.
The fact that it's so weird. How do you know the Nashville Sounds?
I think we're getting a pro.
Nah, don't.
Are we not getting a pro team?
Everybody, they talk about for years we're getting a pro team.
I thought we were getting an expansion
team. They are
a
pro team. You're talking about MLB.
MLB level.
They've mentioned Nashville is on the short list, Nashville or Vegas, for the next expansion team.
Yeah, it's probably going to be Vegas from what's going on there with the plans for the A's to move.
It's a shame. That place should just be but Nashville, done away with.
Nashville's a good sports. I got the by the way, Predators, really? We're going to name a team the Predators?
You know why, though, right? When they were digging out the area for the stadium, they found a saber-toothed tiger skeleton in the remain or like in the rubble, and that's where they got the name
you
from.
You being serious?
Yeah, I swear.
In the mouth of that saber-toothed tiger was a DVD of To Catch a Predator.
Yeah,
and then seasons 1 through 3.
Chris Hansen started walking around. We were like, wait a minute.
Yeah, is Chris Hansen the mascot?
Yeah. The thing is, actually, we had him on. Wasn't Aaron Weber the guy, the comedian who made the joke at the Bergazzi show?
Oh, it wasn't him. It was one of his buddies.
Oh, he's like, it's always great being a Predators fan until you start walking around like a zoo in Ohio. And you're sure, I'm a Predators fan. You're standing around a bunch of 9-year-olds.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't play as well in public.
We love having
Bergazzi, by the way. Great, he's a Nashville guy. He's a great dude.
Nate's a Mount Juliet guy. Yeah, Nate's blown up. We had Aaron Weber on the show. Weber, I'm a fan of Weber.
We've had Weber and we had
Dusty Slay, one of my favorite comedians.
Which is, yeah, I wish he would get more
play. He's got his whole podcast network there, right? I used to play basketball with Nate back in Astoria, Queens back in the day when he was in New York.
Listen, I'm just saying, you can do the live thing from here for Fanatics. You got,
we play basketball
you got
twice
Bergazzi
a week.
Over here. You can join in on his
6 a.m. at East Park.
And
we
come
got
over
basketball.
To our podcast, bro. This is a win-win.
You would drop me in a freaking heartbeat. I know how disloyal you are.
I wouldn't drop you. I'm just saying.
I would
that
be
having, obviously, we still need your knowledge, bro. You're still in. You're
I think this would be
in.
A perfect two-man show.
Don't you dare.
The Scott and Sausage Fingers show. I got the name for you. There you go.
Hey, as Scott and I as a team don't like when you say that to me. Okay. So we would.
Like Daddy, would you like some sausage?
Maybe he does like
that. Dang it, Scott. Don't you do this to me.
Scott and Mike has a nice ring to it all of a sudden.
Third man out.
Is Pancake Pantry still in business? That's going to be the deciding
Pancake
factor.
Actually, they are still in business, but they've got some rivals these days. But no one coming down for their pancake throne. That's for sure. Couple other breakfast spots that are hot.
Also got a shout out Vanderbilt. I got a shout out Vanderbilt star Pedro Alvarez, who graduated in like 2008, drafted by the Pirates, became an all-star. You guys probably don't remember this guy.
Yeah. I was going to say, I thought you were talking Francisco. Pedro Alvarez, yeah.
Oh, he's an
Pedro Alvarez. Okay. He made second overall pick.
Yep.
And he went to, high school. I went to high school with him, by the way. So he was my teammate at Horace Mann, which has since produced Harrison Bader. My little school in New York in the Riverdale section of the Bronx, for 130 years, not a single pro athlete. All of a sudden, Pedro Alvarez, who's 2 years younger than me, my shortstop, when I'm playing first base for 2 years, this guy was incredible. Like this pudgy little freshman dropping 450-foot bombs, goes off to Vanderbilt, all SEC, freshman rookie of the year, All America. The guy was like all Team USA, and then he becomes an all-star in the major leagues. So Pedro Alvarez is my guy till I die. And then Harrison Bader, now in the Yankees, came out of my high school too.
Only
so I got
reason
two.
I cared about Vandy back then, the coach. Oh, first name was Tim
Corbin.
Boston guy.
Tim Corbin,
Boston guy.
No way.
Corbin.
I'll
teams
be honest.
Were nasty.
If you want
those
to leave now, you can, Jay. We're good.
David Price. Think about this team. David Price. Sure. Okay. Mike Minor was pitching on that team. J.P. Arencibia, who went on to be a catcher. They drafted like 14 guys every year. They probably still do.
Well, also had a number. My big guy was one of my card losses, by the way. 2019. I'm going to say, check this up. J.J. Bladé. I'm going to say it was like
J.J.
the fifth overall pick or something for the Marlins.
Fourth overall. Went to the A's.
Got traded to the A's last year.
J.J. Bladé. One of the best names in baseball.
And one of the worst prospects. No, I'm just kidding. He does have potential, but he was supposed to be the guy. But hard to be the guy in Miami.
Is he
fourth overall? He's probably right. I thought he was fifth.
Fourth overall.
I knew he was top five.
I'm going to trust whatever Scott said was right. So, yeah.
Dansby Swanson, first overall.
Overall pick 4, yeah.
The Dans? Sure.
He was right. He nailed it. You know, so you've been collecting, you said 30 years.
How old are you, Scott?
30 plus. I'm 38.
Oh, yeah. You're so, like,
no, I thought
same
he was
age
older
as
than
us. Well, he is older than us.
He's a year old.
My first pack was
like
89 tops is probably my first pack of cards. So,
okay, so growing up, Scott, the card for you growing up, was it the Griffey?
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, it wasn't the card that I owned.
No,
I couldn't afford an 89 Upper Deck Griffey.
That thing becked in the bucket for $40 back then. I remember
40.
Yeah, I remember me and Russ would sit around like $40. Must be nice to be rich. Bunch of scumbags. Yeah, no chance.
You know what I was excited about as a kid? And these are we grew up in the junk wax era. This was like the total, especially 90, 91, when Griffey came on board, every fly by night company started producing cards, right? there was a set of cards. It was only Griffey cards, and they were all like silver foil refractors. There'd be like a gold silver foil special card. I don't know if Upper Deck made it or if some other company made it, but I collected these. Like, they're totally worthless today.
Interesting.
I was so proud of these like silver foil Griffey cards. And then the one gold one I had, which was the big deal.
Now, see, the A-Rod was a big one for me. The 94 Upper Deck, I bought that card at a show for $15. Star Rookie, 1994 A-Rod. I was pretty excited about it.
I never had the SP, the Dyke. Although now I bought, my buddy and I went in on a, this is one of his ideas. You know, I have a friend, my best friend, we collect the cards. He's one of probably the top 2,000 wealthiest people in the country now. His name's Eli. His first name's Eli. But he was like a Forbes 30 under 30.
Yep.
He's working in a private equity partner. So now Eli like messaged me every so often. He'll be like, let's get an A-Rod, you know, SP Dicot, undervalued. He thinks he has like the values figured out. So we found like a 10, like a BCCG 10 A-Rod Dicot SP for like $80. And he's like, let's take a flyer on it. We'll crack it and regrade it, you know? So we haven't done it yet. Of course, we bought the card. It's still sitting there. I'm looking at it, though. It's probably going to be a 7 or an 8.
Yeah, I was going to say, a BCCG 10. Yeah, that thing's been manhandled.
I can't find this. Did you find Eli? I found an old Eli. I can't find a young
Dude,
Eli.
Come on.
This is going to have to be further research into
we'll
this.
We'll find it by the end of the show. We'll edit it in.
Yeah, we'll,
we'll manipulate it.
We'll come back in. Yep. Honestly, like I feel like this interview has been fantastic. I don't really, we've kind of gone over what we usually allot for time, but anything else going on that you want to talk about right now? Because I think we obviously have to have you back in the future.
Yeah, I'm happy to come back. Now, all I'll say is just truly, I mean, I know there's a lot of excitement in the hobby about Fanatics Live, a lot of maybe questions about what it's going to be, what it's going to look like, how it's going to evolve. But all I'm going to say is we just had, you know, a team all hands meeting this morning, and there's so much exciting things happening, so many creative people involved. I'm super gung-ho, obviously, about these original programs that we're going to continue to build out. And, you know, we're going to onboard more sellers, and it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing, doing it in a way, by the way, that is focused on the trust and safety that's so big for us because of the other issues we're seeing out there.
No, that's key.
And I want to wrap this up quickly with a question for you guys, because I'm actually, this is a question I'm having internally with members of the team.
Here we go.
Because you're in this, and you guys are breaking too with your own network, right?
So we have our own live streaming app, Card Shop Live. We talked to Nick Bell. We asked if he wanted to buy it early.
He's going to buy it out, I'm pretty sure.
It's for sale cheap, I'll tell you. We're ready to merge. Okay, go ahead.
Beyond that, I mean, have you guys done any data or research into like the TAM, they call it, the total addressable market? I'm always trying to figure out how many people just total in the world, or maybe in America, skip it to America.
Yeah.
Who participate in breaks on a daily basis or maybe in a weekly basis who are buying cards in that way. Like, how big is this space? How many people are listening to this podcast, for crying out loud? You want to let those numbers out?
So, like, if we have Simmons on the show, major guest, right, comes on, we make some or even just like if there is a headline, we'll crack top 50, top 100 in sports, which in general, this is just generic numbers, by the way, top 50, they said for a while there, back when we were doing it, like 20,000 to 35,000 for that episode, for an episode like that.
So
right. So let's say an average is 15 or whatever, right?
Sure.
15,000. That's 15,000 dedicated people who are listening to your podcast about sports cards. You have to figure that this is like the demo, right? If you care about sports cards, you listen to this podcast. That's 15,000 people. Like, and all things considered, it's not that many people.
It's a tiny number,
right? I mean, when you think of how many sports fans there are? 100 million people watch the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
You figure there may be 200 million sports fans in this country, right? 250 maybe.
Sure.
If you count soccer, maybe it's everybody.
I don't.
So the Fanatics Live mission and what we're trying to do is like, how do we get those sports fans who watch the games, who maybe bet on the games, who kind of engage with the athletes and these games in every way but cards? How do we convert them to become collectors in this space to grow your podcast? Our platform, everybody would grow if we can get more people in, right? So that's sort of the nut we're trying to crack. I think Fanatics, because they have, you know, the Mitchell Ness and the Lids and the tops, like they have such a reach with the apparel and everything else. Like people interact with Fanatics more than they probably do with sports cards. So if we can get those Fanatics buyers, get Fanatics buyers to come into the sports card vertical, now we're in business. And that's the mission. That's what we're excited about. That's why Michael Rubin keeps saying we want to 10x the space. And listen, if Michael Rubin says it, you know, we can do it.
I mean, I believe there's a world. I don't know how fast we can do it. I've started to get a little more skeptical on how fast that takes. And if we're talking about US or you're talking worldwide, but there's obviously right. what I think we've seen more and more on social media lately, the popularity in some of the Asian countries where you're seeing a lot of guys breaking product.
Finally getting access to
wax. They're getting access and breaking product over there, which I find very, very interesting. And then when we're doing like these live NFT breaks on our own YouTube stuff, you got guys from like Norway, Ireland, I think it was like Singapore, multiple people just, and there's only 200 people in this break, but you had all these people from around the world getting in on these. It is kind of crazy. And I think you're to your point, who has those numbers? I would love to know, but if there is something Fanatics can do, I'd be very curious to hear what ideas they have, because I also think that there's almost like a brick wall where you get so far and then interest kind of just falls off. Like there is a peak of interest until, I don't know what you have to be. Like you have to be a complete dedicated sports nut to have a chance of being a card collector. But if you aren't going to every game, you're not following a player, you're not going to get into the card world. I don't know where that separation in fan to hobby enthusiast is, but it does seem like there is a wall somewhere where you cannot get them to cross over, at least in the last 2 years of watching the hobby. So I hope I'm wrong.
I know we're out of time. I will say this. Let's schedule another episode. Maybe we have a town hall symposium on this very topic. We can get like sports fans who don't collect. We can get collectors. We can get people together and really figure it out. Like, what is the barrier? What is that wall you're talking about? Because I agree with you. There is friction to get those people to convert. Let's crack this nut, guys. Let's figure it out.
In the meantime,
did we just create one of the most popular episodes we will ever have coming up, the town hall?
In the meantime, let's go ahead and in the next team meeting, Card Shop Live, a fantastic little live streaming app, would be a heck of an addition
to Fanatics Live. Yeah, absolutely.
Comes with a nice little spokes voice in the hobby.
All right, so
I'll bring it back to the team.
Three things we're taking away from this, or you need to take away from this, Scott, is, of course, buy out our app. Yep. Tell us who Eli is. And get Android access to Fanatics Live. I am over it, okay? That's all I'm saying.
Do you know how expensive it is to build an app?
Mr. I throw out an idea for a new show, and now we got IT creating stuff back in. I want Android. That's all I'm saying.
HQ was iOS only for the first 6-8 months. I mean, it takes time. It's coming, obviously.
We have Android for Card Shop Live. Fanatics Live could get this.
That's true. They've also stolen
a bunch of our other ideas to their credit, but they can get Android. I have faith in their bankroll.
I believe in you. That's all I'm saying.
If you're going to roast me, I'm going to end with a final roast for you guys. Please. Change the name of this thing. This bothers me to no end.
Of what?
Sports cards. Sports card. Sports card nonsense.
No, don't you dare.
That S kills me.
Stop. You're putting
it
in people's minds.
To say.
You are infecting people's minds as we speak.
No one calls sports it sports card nonsense anyways. Everybody calls it card.
That's why he wants us to change it. No, it's too late. We can't. Rebranding would take forever.
Oh.
No. Don't you dare.
You just
a little
the
red
S.
paint. A little red paint is all it takes.
That's all you have to do. And expand the font just a little bit. All right. Thank you. That's good critique. Scott Rogowski, Fanatics Live.
Thank you, Scott.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining. We can't wait for the town hall and other future episodes where you'll be joining as third man. This was a pleasure. Thanks again.
You got it.
Oh,
there you go. That was Scott. By the way, you didn't hear this off air.
No,
Jesse
put
goes,
that in.
Jesse
Eddie
goes,
put that
gonna,
in.
Yeah, Jesse goes, I'm going to text you later. He goes, please don't. That was the sound of a man who just does not want to hear from you.
I only text him like 3 or 4 times
a
day.
We can be done. That was like a high ending to end on. It was a good show. Well-rounded. We're not going to. Yeah, let's just be done there.
That's right.
Let's call it.
Yeah. Man, that does stink. We had a number of other good topics in the mailbag. We will have to keep those for Thursday's episode. Let me just end it with this. The soccer game, the big Nashville, this made like national news, the soccer game, where it was the League's Cup for Nashville Soccer Club versus Inter Miami. Messi was here in town. Right after we ended Thursday's episode, a guy reached out, just saying like, hey, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but they're going to the final, the League Cup, tickets are on sale right now. I was like, dude, I think I want to go to this. That would be amazing. I found like 6th row back close to the goal, close to the middle field, somewhere in between there. And I bought two tickets. I spent $1,700. And now, granted, that was on the cheaper side.
I thought it was more than that.
No. I spent $1,700. Okay. That was the cheaper side
all
of tickets.
In, fees and everything.
Fees and everything. Ticketmaster is a criminal. They should be put down. I cannot believe what they charge. Anyway, I then almost immediately realized, oh, crap, I forgot that dinner that my family has planned for a month to do for my wife and I for our anniversary. And I realized, well, that can't happen. I have to sell these tickets. And I thought, yeah, I'm sure I can get my money back, or maybe I could even make some money. Proceeded to lose a solid $800 on those tickets.
Such a stupid kid.
I had to mention it because I posted it all over our socials trying to move the tickets.
I like that people messaged me direct. I was like, you think I'm foolish enough to buy these for $1,800? This was the other guy.
Here's the thing, what I found out too is like, everyone says, oh, well, the closer you get to the game time, ticket prices are going to go down because people want to get rid of them. In this case, that didn't happen, but that's what I thought was going to happen. So I kept lowering the price of mine. And then turns out, like, if I had just waited till almost game time, I probably could have gotten close to what I paid for them. So
it just makes me happy.
Just overall good investment weekend for myself. That was an excellent interview, like Mike said. We'll save your mailbag stuff for next episode. And, yeah, I guess that's it. You want to...
We have one more normal episode. I'm going to say say Thursday is our last regular episode.
For 2 weeks, at least.
For a month.
No.
Yeah, I'm going to say a month.
Okay, so you went from telling me that you may not be gone any episodes, maybe one episode, to now it's going to be a month.
But I probably won't be in here for them. Oh, I'm telling you, this is going to be our last normal episode. Thursday will be our last normal episode for 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
I texted Simmons. He hasn't texted me back. I was going to try to get him on next week.
What Mike is referring to is, so next week, my wife and I are going on our like first anniversary vacation ever. And this is the first one in vacation period in years.
First time you've taken on an anniversary vacation?
Yeah, I think like, well.
Quit spending your money on soccer and take care of the woman, for God's sakes. You married up and you're buying
messy tickets. We're going out to Vineyard Wine Country, San Francisco area. And we're going to be gone for a week. So Mike's going to go solo next week.
No, I won't be solo.
Well, he's going to go with somebody. The week after that, I will be going solo. Well, we may have one day off because of Labor Day. And then I'm going to go solo at least one episode. And then the week after that is when we're supposed to do back to normal. But we'll see.
And one of these weeks, we find out if we still have a job in January. Haven't heard from Spotify on that yet.
That's going to be a really interesting number as well.
Hint, if you're looking to get us back, happy to re-sign with you.
And we got Scott Rogowski already signed for third man in. So yep. That's perfect. All right. So that's your lookout for the future episodes. Next episode, we got Card Letter joining us for hopefully some more quiz and games. Actually, those episodes have been pretty popular. So
also,
looking forward to that.
Last little plug, Card Shop Live, to be serious now. Wednesday, Massive released a Topps Pristine Baseball. We have a legit tower of this stuff coming in.
Oh, do you
like
really?
30 cases. So we will have a ton of that. Jesse's got his Leaf Pop Century. He's going to be breaking on there as well. But yeah, Topps Pristine looks absolutely awesome. I love the product. That's why we went so heavy on it. I think it's an awesome product. So we'll be breaking that like crazy. Yeah, we'll be breaking stuff tonight too. Tonight, tomorrow, every night, till the kid comes, basically. Sell cards until Theo shows. That's the message.
That's the dream come true right there, baby.
Boom. Roasted. Thanks for listening. Sports Cards Nonsense brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network, powered by Spotify. See you on Thursday. Goodbye.